then you forget the chant. Just visualize. We just do. Some people, after you teach them, they don't do the chant. They sit there. Some like, okay, now I got it. And then, cannot let go. Some people put in, never do the chanting in the meaning. So forget this hand mudra thing, you know, like that, like that, like that. You can just go like that. Alright? So actually, you take the right pinky, the right small finger, put it under your left small finger. First step. Then you take your two thumbs and hold your two pinky down. Then the ring fingers join together and go straight up. And then you take your middle finger of your right hand and put it under the middle finger of your left hand. And then the two index fingers should hold the fingers down, and then you have like this. You have four points, intermediate points, I'm sorry, four cardinal points in the center like this. All right? So this is called a mudra, okay? So again, I'll show you one more time. Everybody looking left and right. You take the right pinky and put it, and then after this we have a pop quiz. So we pick a victim. And this time cannot take any books. Just kidding. Take the right pinky and put it under the left pinky. Alright, that's the first step. And then you hold the two pinkies down with your thumb. Then you take your ring finger up, stick it straight up, follow each other. Then you take the right middle finger, put it under the left middle finger, and then you take the two index fingers and just hold the two middle fingers down, just like that. All right, very good. So this, how should it be held? Some people hold it in many ways. Some people hold it very high up. Some people hold it very low down. Some people hold it to the left and right. The place you should hold it is at your heart. Okay, the place you hold it should be at your heart area. If you can manipulate it, it's okay. If not, for now, forget it. Don't unwind your fingers. If you unwind, you can't get it back again. Right? So just keep it like that. Keep it like that till tomorrow. So if you can, you take your mala, wrap it around twice, and then you do it with your mala, so that your hand is not empty. Like I say, forget it this time. Just do it with your hand, alright? It's a represent that it's not empty. This represents Mount Meru, the center of the universe. In Buddhist cosmography, it is the center of the universe, and on the highest mountain, represented by the highest mountain, in the four continents, alright? The four continents doesn't represent Australia, America. It's the four continents in samsara. And then within these continents are the mountains, earth, sky, trees, forests, all the gold, silver, coral, all the wonderful food, restaurants, environments, animals, all the mountains, and the sun, the moon, and the stars. Is here. So the words are very short, but the meaning is very great. And even the object of your attachment. Maybe we have great attachment to our girlfriend. Maybe we have great attachment to not having a girlfriend. Maybe we have very great attachment to our boyfriend or not having a boyfriend. Maybe we have great attachment to food, to physical comforts, maybe to luxuries, to money, to wealth, to position. Even great attachment to harming our enemies, great attachment to our negative emotions. So all these attachments, we hold together. All right. Please visualize all these things. Please visualize all these things clearly.
No, Mama. Never mind. You leave it.
Never mind. This one, no important. We learn slowly. Your hand already. Like that. So never mind, you just offer mandala like this. Yeah, it's okay. Inside you visualize everything. You're suffering very much. Never mind, never mind, it's okay. Then you concentrate on the prayer. Very important, alright? Then, please visualize everything that I've just mentioned to you. And even my biggest attachment, I confess to you, since it's Sunday Confession Day, is statues. I love statues. So I offer all the statues to the Buddhas. Everything I offer up, alright?
With all due respect, the Dharma book contains all the teachings of the Holy Buddha. So
So we should not put down on the floor or near our feet. We should treat it with the deepest respect. Many of us don't know, so we don't know. Okay, we continue. You have the eight verses?
Yes.
Just recite that. Everyone doesn't have their mind. Everybody can listen along and meditate on it, same. Open in that one. Turquoise and coral and diamonds and all that are under custom, these class of beings. So they collect, they have a lot of wealth. So Zambala belongs to this class of beings that has a lot of wealth. And therefore, during the time of Buddha Shakyamuni, he was one of the disciples of Buddha Shakyamuni who received teachings, who followed Buddha and was his disciple. So in order for us to view or see something in its true nature or correctly, we must have the wisdom eye, or in other words, we must be free from obscuration and defilements. The way to be free from obscuration and defilements is the purification of negative mind, negative emotions such as anger, hatred, and desire, etc. The root cause of anger, hatred, and desire is ignorance, or self-cherishing mind. Ignorance is synonymous with self-cherishing mind. Because you are ignorant, you hold on to a self-cherishing mind that views objects inherently. So, due to our self-cherishing mind that is very strong, that has come from many, many lifetimes, again and again and again, and we have reconditioned. In this life, when we do something over and over again, we don't have to think about it anymore, we can just do it automatically. For example, eating and sleeping, walking, standing, whatever. We can just do it automatically without much thought. So like that, it's just a matter of conditioning. So this self-cherishing mind has been conditioned again and again and again, over and over and over again for many lifetimes. Therefore, it is spontaneous. It's just like when a child is born, as I explained the other day, from the mother, immediately it will suckle the mother's breast to have milk. Its first thought is, I must survive. Innately. It may have a very subtle mind, but it still thinks, I, me, me, me. Sometimes it may bite the mother, sometimes it may suck too hard, sometimes it creates a lot of pain for the mother. It is inconsiderate of the mother, it just needs to feed and take care of itself, because this self-cherishing mind is very, very strong. So children cause a lot of problems and pain and difficulties to mothers, because the nature, and that includes all of us, the nature is the self-cherishing mind is very strong, even a parent is strong when they're very young. So like that, this self-cherishing mind is what creates a lot of suffering and problems. We think it's instinct. Instinct from what? Instinct must come from some kind of habit or knowing. It doesn't come from nothing. So definitely it comes from the self-cherishing mind. Therefore, the self-cherishing mind is the root cause of all the negative afflictions and emotions, such as hatred, desire, anger, etc., etc. From hatred, anger, desire, jealousy, etc., we do negative actions with the body, such as killing, stealing, lying, harsh talk, schismatic talk, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, etc., etc. So from those negative actions arise negative karmas. The negative karmas that arose from body will return back to your body, and you will suffer in your body. The negative question, a negative karma that has arisen in speech will come back in the form of sound, or you are accused, or you are talked about, or you are bitten about, without any cause. And whatever you say, people will not listen. Whatever you say, people will not respect. In fact, whatever you say, people find unpleasant and people do not want to listen to. So that type of speech comes from the fact that you have created that kind of speech to other people in the past. Then along with that is of the mind. Same example. So all that arises from the self, all that arises from ourselves. So since it arises from ourselves, the method is also within ourselves. The method was discovered by great beings like Buddha Shakyamuni and Tsongkhapa, and they have taught it to us, they have explained it to us, they have given us the method. They cannot take our sufferings away, they cannot give us their happiness, but they can definitely give us knowledge and method and blessings on how to attain their enlightened state. Like parents can never take away the suffering of the child when it's grown up, or give their happiness over, the best thing a parent can do is to teach the child to the best of their ability, and from that the child can do what it wants in a positive way, hopefully. So like that, Buddhas are great teachers. So teaching is the greatest gift, it's the most supreme type of giving. So like that, when we collect such negative karma, this negative karma will manifest in ways that will block us from having success. Success in wealth, success in long life, success in harmony, success in understanding, success in wisdom. Anything that we want to do in relations to betterment of our lives will not be successful because of the negative karma that we have collected and its results fruitioning or opening up. So when the results open up or fruition, it blocks you from attaining your desires. So this can come in form many ways. It can come in form of poverty, non-success in business. It can come in the form of ill health. It can come in form of disharmony. It can come in form that you have a bad personality and you cannot get along, or you're disturbing to other people. It can come in the form that you are unpleasant. It can come in the form of bad smells. It can come in the form of VO. I mean, anything that keeps people away or keeps you away from happiness, it will manifest in many different ways. One of the ways when we practice Dharma, when it manifests, is when you have very strong karma. This karma stops you from doing Dharma practice and understanding the point of Dharma practice clearly. So that's why the teacher or the master, like Tsongkhapa, will be teaching the Dharma to you one language perfectly, and he understands perfectly. But yet, everyone in the audience will grasp it differently. Some will grasp its finer points immediately to be able to practice. Some cannot grasp the finer points, can only grasp half. Some can grasp only the superficial points and still not be able to hold on to it. It is not that you are not familiar with the teachings. It depends fully on merit. Because they're in the monasteries when our masters teach. There are Sun monks who have never heard the teachings. They hear it. They immediately are able to grasp onto it, even simple subjects. There are some monks that study over and over, they never understand it, never understand it, and they stuck on the superficial points. So like that, what is that dependent on? On merits. Why is understanding the Dharma well dependent on merits, created on body, speech, and mind, dependent on bodhicitta and eight worldly, three of the eight worldly motives? Why is it so strong? Because when you study Dharma, you study the methods to be free from suffering and freed from unhappiness forever. So when you have a lot of bad karma obstructs you from reaching that state. One of the ways is to obstruct you from not understanding the Dharma. One of the ways. Or when you want to go for Dharma, you suddenly get sick. Or when you want to go for the Dharma, someone calls you and says, let's go out, distracts you. Someone is trying to teach you the Dharma, and then you feel sleepy, you cannot listen, or your mind cannot focus. So those are all manifestations of very powerful bad karma. Because I know someone last year that is close to me. Every time I teach, that person falls. I knew two that falls asleep. Every time they fall asleep. And I've scolded the person, say it's very rude. They cannot help it. They don't want to. They'll be fresh right before the teachings. During teachings, they'll fall asleep the whole time, and right after teachings, they'll wide awake. I'm not kidding. And so I had that person do more meditational practices, some things to increase intelligence. This year, this person never falls asleep during teachings, ever. I've noticed myself. So falling asleep during teachings, unable to concentrate, also not able to focus on the Dharma, not understanding the Dharma, having wrong view toward the Dharma, having wrong ideas toward the Dharma teachers, toward the Buddhas, toward Dharma concepts, the main obstruction is negative karma. Why? Because your negative karma's fruitioning functions to stop you from achieving happiness. So practicing the Dharma correctly will bring you happiness. So if you don't have the karma to become happy, you will definitely not engage in the methods that bring that result. So, if you have problems understanding Dharma, if you cannot stick to your mind, or you find a lot of obstacles going for Dharma, or you have a lot of doubts, or you have wrong view towards your gurus, or you think your gurus are this way when they're not, don't be fully dependent on your perception. It says that very clearly many times in the text. Don't be fully dependent on your view of what you see. Because your view is with ignorance as a result of many negative karma, and definitely your wisdom is not that of a person that has meditated and prayed and focused on the Dharma and held their vows for many, many years. It will not be the same. Just holding the monk vows and nun vows are very holy. Very, very holy. So definitely you may have wisdom in worldly aspects of life, but that's nothing compared to the Dharma. So when we compare our knowledge to the Dharma frees you from all suffering and samsara. PhD in education and whatever helps you for only this life. With all due respect to everyone, I don't mean about myself, I'm better than you and you're nothing. I don't mean it in that way. I'm just giving you the facts. So just because you have a degree and you are very educated and you're very worldly and you know how to do everything in this world, it is good knowledge and you are educated and there are things that people can learn from you. Definitely. Definitely. But your knowledge is only good for one life. And in our previous lives, we were all doctors, we were all lawyers, we were all working in the courts, we were all professors, we were all musicians, we were everything that some people aren't today, yet we are still here. So that proves that this type of knowledge, having a high degree, having worldly knowledge, having worldly education, high education, good job, brings you nowhere in the end, on an ultimate level. Proof of that is, look, we're still here. And even the knowledge that you have in this life will bring you nowhere at the time of death. So when death comes, you cannot flash your degree. When death comes, you cannot say, I have an appointment, not today. You cannot do anything. So worldly degree and worldly knowledge is nothing compared to the knowledge that a Buddha has. Buddha's knowledge is the highest. When I say Buddha, I don't mean only Buddha Shakyamuni. I mean like Buddha Muhammad, I mean like Buddha Jesus, Buddha Krishna, Buddha Tsongkhapa. These are all Buddhas. Different faces, different aspects. So the spiritual knowledge is the most highest. Wherever spiritualism is strong, where spiritual practice is strong, in a family, in a community, in a city, there will be more harmony, there will be more peace. And if anything, more tolerance. Because Buddhism is very good. Religious practice is very good, and in this case, Buddhism is very good. Because if we want to bring Buddhism to one line, to one sentence, and you want to remember it clearly, it's very simple and easy to follow. It's the best mantra. If you cannot benefit others, at least don't be a troublemaker. Very simple. And that boils down to total, all the Buddha's teachings. If you cannot be beneficial to others, at least don't be a troublemaker. Don't make trouble. If we do that, we're doing pretty well. So we should remember that line again and again and again and again. That's the best. But we can chant a lot of mantras, do a lot of offerings, we have big statues and everything, and we can't follow that line, we're still going to go to hell. And when you get down there, I'll be waiting for you. Because I'll get there first. And so we'll be in a big molten lava pot boiling together looking at each other. It won't be fun. Right? So that's after I take rebirth in the spirit realm, of course. Right? So we think carefully. If I cannot benefit others, at least I should not be in trouble. Don't gossip. Don't incite problems. Don't incite schism. Don't talk about people behind their back. Ever. Don't ever talk about other people. Don't make comments about other people. You don't like it, that's all. If you make a comment, they remain the same. If you don't make a comment, they remain the same. But if you make a comment, you look bad, not them. And if they are really what you're commenting that they are, people will know eventually, whether you help them along knowing or not. So whether you gossip about people or not, people will know what that person is. People are not stupid, people can see. So it's better never to gossip and talk about people behind their backs, ever. Especially against the Sangha, especially against your gurus. If you do that, then there is no point of return already. When we can start bombasting or saying negative things behind our gurus' backs, what happens? You have gone to a point of no return. Which means there's nothing higher than that. So you are so daring and so bold and so direct to go that far. If you are so bold and so daring to go that far, in worldly terms, you're straightforward, you're good. But in spiritual terms, it is very dangerous ground. Because when you go that far, you go to the point of no return. How do you gain attainment? How do you gain enlightenment without your guru? How? We can be bold, we can be straightforward, we can be direct, and we can tell people off. We can tell them with a good motivation and explain things nicely to them. But gossiping about them doesn't help. talking about them behind them. So if we just gossip and talk negative things about people behind their back, and this is negative karma, imagine if we do that about the Sangha, about the gurus. So it's very, very dangerous. We should never, ever gossip about the gurus. Whoever we are, whatever we are, we may not like someone's guru, but we should never say to them, your guru's no good, he's like this, she's like that, they're like this, and then if they lose faith in their guru, you go to hell. And if they lose faith in their guru, you yourself will never gain attainments. How? You have created the causes for destroying your own enlightenment. So we should never, ever disparage or say negative things or comment about our guru behind their backs, or to talk negative things or infer negative things or say it nicely or say it badly. Doesn't matter. We should respect all gurus, all masters, and follow the one that we like and we have affinity toward. And if we follow and we like the master that we follow well, we should definitely not disparage, say negative things, gossip, or discourage other people. It's very, very dangerous. It is said that when you discourage other people from practicing one sect of Buddhism, for example, we may be Hinayana practitioners, and then they are Mahayana, and then we say, oh, the Mahayana Buddhism is not real. Or we Mahayana, and then we say, Hinayana, not so fast, not so good like Mahayana. The minute we say that word, and the meaning is understood, and the person understands it, and the action is complete, you have collected the karma of killing 1,000 Buddhas, equivalent. You cannot kill a Buddha. Killing a sentient being is very negative karma. Then on top of that, killing an arhat. On top of that, killing your parents. On top of that, the intent to kill a Buddha is very powerful, that karma. Although you cannot kill it, the intent to kill it brings many, many negative karma. So, disparaging Dharma or saying negative things about Dharma, about any sect or any form of a Dharma, Buddha's teachings, will create the cause that you are killing 1,000 Buddhas. So imagine the karmic repercussions of that, the sufferings that come from that. So if we are able to disparage and say negative things about another aspect of the Dharma, then imagine if we disparage our gurus or someone else's guru. Whether you think the guru is holy or not is besides the point. It may be holy and it may be a living Buddha for someone else. Why go and say they are not to someone else and destroy their faith? The person that they have received Dharma from. Who are we to judge? Who are we to say, oh, that person is like this, like that? Our mind is filled with ignorance. Our mind does not have clairvoyance. It cannot see into the future. It cannot judge the actions of the teacher. It cannot see the results of the teacher. It cannot see what the prayers the teachers are doing. We don't have clairvoyance. We don't have omniscience. So if we say negative things about our guru, our master, or even if it's not our master, but someone else's, and the action is complete, and they stop following, or you destroy their relationship, it creates the karma that your relationship with your guru will grow distant, and your dharma institutions, your dharma places will grow distant, will break apart. That is the karma that you create. Why? Because the karma you're creating is disharmony. Disharmony creates more disharmony. And once you create that action, every day it goes unconfessed, unpurified, and increases 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. It increases to the point where when you actually go and get the Dharma, or Dharma talks, or Dharma teachings, or Dharma actions, you will not be able to hear clearly, you will fall sleepy, you'll feel bored, you'll be interrupted, you'll have interruptions around you, you will feel tired, listless, or you just simply feel you cannot accept it, or you don't want it, or you feel discouraged toward it, or you give up. That is the result of your negative karma. Enthusiasm toward Dharma is a sign that your negative karma is purified. When we go for pujas, when we go for prayers, when we practice the Dharma, and we experience negative things, it's a very, very good sign. It means the karma is being purified quickly. You have to purify the karma even now or later. It's better to purify it now and get it over with and get it finished. If you have to purify it later, the karma will increase. Example, if you have the karma to wear a coat, and you wear it in Alaska, or in Antarctica, where it's very cold, it's very beneficial. If you wear the coat at 1 p.m. in the afternoon in Malaysia, walking around on the street, the karma is to get a coat. Wearing it is the same, karma is the same, the coat is the same, but environmentally it's different. So if you have a lot of negative karma, and you suffer that karma, if you suffer that karma here, because the environment is easier, the suffering will be less, although the karma is the same. Whereas if you keep the karma, and you hold it for later, if it manifests in another environment, it will be more severe. Example, if you have the karma to get sick, try to purify before it happens and lessen and mitigate its results. If you have that karma to get sick here in Malaysia, where everything is modern and there's good hospitals, and there's 24-hour clinics, it's very easy. Whereas if I get sick somewhere where, I don't know, somewhere in the desert in Sahara, where am I going to go? The karma to get sick is there, the manifestation of karma is there. You have to get sick, you suffer the same thing. But the place or the condition or the environment that you have to have the karma manifest is very important. So therefore, while you are practicing the Dharma, don't have wrong view that you should not get sick, you should not get wealthy, because you should not have poverty, you should not suffer, have problems, mental difficulties. You should not think like that, because the very fact that you are practicing Dharma and these things are manifesting is a very, very good sign. It's better to suffer sickness, ill health, depression, and unhappiness here where you have relatives, friends, and Dharma brothers and sisters to talk to you, and you have your gurus to consult. So when you practice Dharma deeply and well, and many negative things happen, they are going to happen anyway, but it's good that they happen early and finish off. And in fact, when you practice Dharma and negative things happen, 99% of the time you can be sure that it is much lessened and then it would have been if you did not practice Dharma. Example, if you do a lot of mantras on Jetsong Baba and pray to Jetsong Baba and purify your karma in relation to Jetsong Baba, maybe you were supposed to have a car accident. So when you pray very hard and you do meditations correctly and you do the prayer well to Jetsong Baba, maybe you still have the car accident, but you come out unharmed or slightly scratched. Whereas if you meditate even more and further, maybe you don't even have a car accident, but you dream you have a car accident, and in that dream you suffer tremendously. You suffer all the emotions, anguish, pain, fear of death, fear of loss of your loved ones and relatives, and separation. You suffer tremendously in a dream. What's the difference that you suffer in real life or in a dream? The suffering is the same. The difference is that the karma is purified, there will be no effect. So therefore, when you practice the Dharma, when you do pujas, when you do prayers and meditations, when you make offerings, when you serve your gurus, when you serve the Sangha, it is meant to purify your negative karma and collect positive karma. So when we're doing Dharma practice and sufferings and problems come along, a great practitioner, or one that understands Dharma with wisdom, is happy. So when they do Dharma, and they have sickness, they're uncomfortable, they're tired, they're exhausted, or maybe they're suffering, or maybe they don't have time, they're thirsty, they're hungry, a real Dharma practitioner will be able to endure that type of suffering happily, easily. And although they endure that kind of problem, they do not suffer. That's the difference. They do not suffer. So there is one of enduring pain with suffering, because we are attached to the ego. When you're attached to the ego, you don't want to have suffering. You're selfish. You don't care if other people have it. You don't want it. Whereas when you endure pain without attachment, or you don't have attachment, you can endure the pain. You don't suffer. In fact, the very pain that you have increases your happiness. How? You're accepting the pain, the problems, the difficulties, for the sake of others. So if someone was to say, can you sacrifice your life, and one and a thousand people will be saved, most of us say, yes, I'm scared, but I can. If we were to suffer for only one person, we'll think about it. Like that, when we suffer for the Dharma, we suffer for others, and we can endure hunger, thirst, sickness, and ill health, and unhappiness. We can endure criticisms, we can endure backbiting, we can endure people who go against us, non-cooperation, or problems financially, physically. When we can endure those kind of things for the sake of the Dharma, for the sake of others, the very karma that made you have those sufferings become purified in the process. And by being happy about it and accepting it, you do not create further karma for that to happen in the future. So when we do Dharma practice and we have difficulties and problems, we should try to develop the mind that is happy, that can take the problems, that can heal the problems and take it and accept it. So in fact, when we practice the Dharma, when problems come, we are able to deal with it, we are able to purify it simultaneously while we are dealing with it. So the incredible thing about suffering with Dharma or without Dharma is with Dharma, while you're suffering it, you purify the karma. Whereas without Dharma, while you are suffering the negative results of karma, you create further ones by reacting back negatively. Example, if someone criticizes you, oh, you're not a good Dharma practitioner, oh, you don't know how to chant nicely. When someone criticizes you, it hurts, it has pain. But definitely that pain and hurt had a cause. You had created the cause, you had said that or done that to someone else in the past to get that back. Maybe not the same exact words, but the intent is the same. So when you receive it back, if you understand that it's from your own karma, and you accept it with responsibility, and you don't fight back, and you accept, and you keep quiet and contemplate, while suffering that, you purify the karma to receive that. And you, when you don't fight back, you don't create further karma to get more. So if you don't have Dharma, when someone criticizes you, says something about you, you fight back? No. You defend yourself? No. No, I'm not like that. My motive not like that. My thinking not like that. My action not like that. People who explain themselves are a lot is a sign of very heavy ego and self-grasping, because they want people to know that they are right, that they are correct, that they are good, they are better than you. So people who over-explain and force themselves, their explanations on you, or force their opinions on you, is a very heavy sign of a very, very subtle, strong ego. Very strong ego. Explain when we are asked, and explain gently, and explain with good words, and explain without gossip and backbiting. Very important. Because when someone talks negatively about us, and we go around explaining to everybody our intentions, our real intent is to let people know we are right and they are wrong. So in that process, we collect even more negative karma to be even more misunderstood. And the very purpose of us to explain is to be understood. Isn't that just a terrible irony? So in fact, as Dharma practitioners, we should be able to be happy to endure sufferings for others. We should develop a mental mind and continuum that we can suffer for others. We can bear difficulties if it benefits others. We can bear problems if it benefits others. If they criticize you, if they say negative things about you, even if they try to threaten you, if they hurt you, if they try to defame you, if they try to make your name black, let them. If you have a chance, explain. If you don't, let them. Don't fight back. Don't harm back. Because two wrongs do not make a right. So as a Dharma practitioner who believes in the three jewels, then one should definitely suffer defeat and offer the victory to others. And in the beginning, initially, when we do that, some people might try to take advantage of us. But in the end, everybody will understand our motive and intention and will be loved and liked and protected by others. even there were many people who tried to take advantage of Lord Buddha, like his evil cousin Devadatta. Yu Taijin, we call him. But Buddha never reacted back. So whether we react back negatively or not is whether we understand and practice the Dharma or not. We don't need to practice deep, long Dharma. We don't have to make silly excuses that we are new. But knowing this phrase, offering the victory to others and suffering the defeat, is very powerful. And in that, you develop mental strength, mental capacity, and mental forbearance to be able to take upon yourself sufferings of others. And then when you're able to do that, you have entered the Bodhisattva path. You have entered the path to becoming a Bodhisattva or Bosa or Buddha. And it all starts from that moment, this time. May I suffer the defeat and offer the victory to others. And the first person we can start with all due respect, again, I don't intend it to be myself, but the first person we can start with is our Guru. The one that gives us teachings, the one that's compassionate to us, the one that cares about others, the one that gives us the holy method for becoming a Buddha to be free from the life. His knowledge, his compassion, her, or if your Guru is a lady, her wisdom, her compassion, her knowledge, is much greater than your worldly knowledge, your worldly achievements, and your worldly plans. Much greater. So we should have due respect for the knowledge, the compassion, and the love, that although we may scorn and say negative things and go against our teachers will always be there for us, will always have compassion for us, and will always be ready to accept us. Doesn't that show us something? Something. So we should learn to endure pain, suffering, unhappiness, difficulties, problems, disasters, with the realization it is a result of our karma, and that we do it for others. We should be able to endure that difficulty and that pain. We should develop that mind. Whether you are religious or you are not religious, whether you accept Dharma or Buddhism or not, whether you're a Christian or a Jew, that thought will benefit you in your life. That thought is good for you as a human being. So don't think this is a Buddhist thought. This is a thought that's the truth. Truth is one. Buddhism expresses the truth in one way. Judaism, Hinduism, Islam expresses the truth in another way. But all is the truth. So respect all religious traditions that speak the truth. Bear sufferings for others. Bear difficulties for others. Be able to put up pain for others. Be able to suffer for others. And advance to the point where actually you can meditate and suffer for others. Take your suffering upon you and you suffer for them. Secretly and without them knowing. Then you become a Bodhisattva. So we must develop that type of mind. We must develop that type of strength. We must develop that type of capacity. Suffer for others. Take pain for others. Be able to bear the brunt of negative comments from others. Be able to bear malicious talk for others. Be able to bear black talk and back talking for others. Have compassion for these people who do these things to you. They are ignorant like you. I'm sure we have done that at one point in our lives with respect to all of you. So when we did it out of ignorance. Now that we have the Dharma, we don't do it anymore. Like that, many people don't have the Dharma or have bad karma not to practice the Dharma well. So they have bad karma not to practice Dharma well. Therefore, by the force of their bad karma, they have no choice but to do these kind of negative actions. So how can we add more wood to the fire and burn up the fire more? By fighting back. They're already suffering. They're already collecting so much bad karma by doing this. Why add to it, fight with them, and have them do more? Why contribute to their suffering? Why contribute to their problems and their anger? Why contribute? It won't solve your anger, it won't solve your problem, it won't solve your unhappiness. Forgive them. Forgive them and let go. Forgive them and surrender. And in surrendering and letting go and forgiving, you gain mental strength. And that will be able to deal with even bigger and more vast difficulties. And that is a Bodhisattva's ideal way of thinking. So, we should encourage other people toward good thinking, positive thinking. That's what Dharma friends are about. Dharma friends are not sitting there examining and watching each other, who's doing Dharma, who's not. They're not being criticizing. Dharma friends are there, instead of pushing them away, instead of saying, go away, get out, you're disturbing us, we should keep them near us. I mean, I'm talking about within reason, of course. I'm not talking about that you have a psychopathic killer who's a murderer, and you know, we practice compassion, and he kills everybody in the center because it's compassion. I mean, I'm not saying be ridiculous. Use your wisdom. So when you have difficult people who are overwhelmed by suffering and oppression and negative karma, they talk a lot. They create schism. They have big mouths. They gossip. They slander. They're rude. Treasure them as if you have found a precious treasure. Don't push them away. Have compassion on them. Keep them near you. Help them. Help them in any way you can. Help them emotionally. Help them financially if you can. Help them materially. Help them in any way, because if you don't help them, what Dharma are you practicing? Are you better than them? These people are the objects of our prayers. With all bragging aside or boasting, I'm trying to do that in my life. I have some people that disturb me very much, backbite against me. I try my best to show compassion to them, to humble myself to them, and to let them win. I really try that. Sometimes I'm successful, sometimes I'm not, because I'm not a Buddha. But I'm getting more and more successful. Maybe that comes from maturity, learning, understanding, praying, collecting more merits, or simply surrendering to my guru and saying what he says is correct and I will follow it. Sometimes it's simple as that. So I have people too that disturb me, yes, and I try not to hate them. I don't hate them. I try not to think bad thoughts about them, and when they come and see me later on, whatever, I try to be very kind to them. And I don't try to be artificial in my kindness. I really try to develop this feeling toward them. And then when I conquer this one person, conquer means not necessarily that they love me, that when I conquer this person that has harmed me, backbite against me, talk against me, created difficulties against me, when I conquer this person, I know I have conquered. And I can go to the next one and the next one, and it becomes easier and easier and easier and easier till I reach a point where they don't disturb me anymore. And there's no mantras, there's no miracles, there's no meditation, there's nothing to that. It's good old simple hard work. But it's worth it. If you do it, it's the same situation. If you don't do it, it's the same situation. So better to experience the situation and grow from it, and improve from it, and become better from it, than to just experience the situation, react negatively, and then never grow from it. Never grow. So I think that's very, very important. May I suffer the defeat and offer the victory to others. Please hold people who disturb you and create problems and difficulties with compassion. Near you doesn't mean you have to keep them on your shoulders and carry them everywhere. Keep them near you means in your heart. Help them. Never be tired of helping them. The Buddha is never tired of helping us. Our gurus are never tired of putting up with us. So we should be just as courageous to put up with them. Help them materially, financially, food, emotionally. Make them comfortable. Remember Atisha and that monk? Please don't let these teachings remain in this room and at this time. And when we leave and when the time is over, we go back to our old selves. With all due respect, not to say you're so bad. Please, let's not go back to our old selves and our old ways and our old habits and thinking. Please, think about this. enter your heart, accept it, and practice it. Not when you're in a good mood, not when you have a good business deal, not when you have money in the bank, not when you have harmony, not when you've had your supper, not when you've had your nice KFC chicken, not when you are healthy, now. Immediately. And then experience a change. So step one, guru devotion, most important. That is a training of guru devotion. To be able to humble, to put our egos, put our pride, put our knowledge, put everything down in front of the guru that we visualize as the Buddha. And in that, we learn to do that full stop, and we are able to apply it to everyone else. Everyone else. It starts from there. So if we can disparage and say things against our guru, and say negative things against our spiritual teachers, who practice spiritualism, whether we see it as it or not, or whether they're doing it the way we like it or not, they are still practicing spiritualism and carrying the burdens of the Buddhas. The statues cannot teach you. The statues cannot teach you. The Dharma books cannot speak to you and explain. You need a living teacher who is doing his best on practice. So where can you find such a rare jewel? And if you find such a rare jewel, should you throw it out so easily due to your own negative emotions and misconceptions and wrong views? So I've come to that understanding with a relationship with my guru, and it took many years. I hope that doesn't happen with all of you, with your individual gurus, whoever they may be, with respect to them. So please, hold difficult people near you. I'm not talking about physical. Hold difficult people near you. Don't chase them out. Don't add to their suffering and pain and trouble. Don't add to their already difficult lives. Don't make it harder for them. Make it easier for them as part of your Dharma practice. Make it easier and easier for them as part of your Dharma practice. I'm saying within reason, of course. If someone's robbing you blind, okay, I suffered defeat and give him all my money, it's okay, I sit there, me and my wife sits on the street with our kids, with a bald, with black glasses, at long stop. Because no other choice. No, I'm not talking about that extreme. You know what I'm talking about. With wisdom, of course. So if we cannot benefit others, at least don't be a troublemaker. Don't be a troublemaker. So if other troublemakers come around, don't make trouble for them. I think that's very, very important. That's the key teachings. And everything that we teach leads to that. So Zavala practice originating during time where that's up. So my point of saying that is due to bad karma, we get wrong view. Due to wrong view, even our spiritual teachers or Buddha that may appear to us, we will view them as impure. So, like that, during Buddha's time, he had a cousin, his uncle's son, named Devadatta, Prince Devadatta. This is in Buddha's life story. Prince Devadatta hated the Buddha, was jealous of him since childhood, was competitive with him since childhood. Even after Buddha manifested enlightenment, Devadatta hated him, tried in many ways to scorn him and to defame him and to bring his reputation down. There was a time when Devadatta paid a young, beautiful woman handsomely, paid her well, and she went in front of the middle of a Dharma course with thousands of people there and many hundreds of Sangha members. She rose up in the center and pointed to the Buddha and said, "I am pregnant and you are the father." And the Buddha, skillfully, not to make her lose face, said, "Yes, I am the father."